And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, December 29th, and I want to wish you a Happy New Year. I do want you to have a pencil and paper handy because things that come up in the new year, you might want to let folks know about, get involved, do whatever you have to do. Let's start off with an announcement from the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project. Karen writes, "Hey friends, please go to our webpage to access our action alert giving you information and talking points for scoping comments on the flat timber sale, which proposes up to 26,327 acres of commercial logging in one sale, including two forest plan amendments that violate forest plan standards for elk and deer cover, and to cut conifer trees up to 30 inches in size, which is old growth in aspen stands. We are greatly concerned by the potential cumulative impacts of this huge sale on top of existing severe soil and stream damage from past clear cutting, large tree logging, and ongoing cattle grazing. Please help us greatly scale down this timber sale by sending in your comments by January 6th. We saw three black bears, many woodpeckers, elk, deer, badger, three coyotes, and songbirds in that timber sale, and we want them to be able to survive, along with the owls we heard at night and the streams and creeks that have red band trout swimming in them. Thank you for the wild." Karen Coulter of the Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project. Here is her link, bluemountainbiodiversityproject.org. That's all one word. Blue Mountains, with an S, biodiversityproject.org/comment. Karen's been up there in the backwoods of northeastern Oregon for a long time doing what has to be done. And speaking about what has to be done, here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. The buffalo migration has begun in earnest. As the snow deepens, the life-giving grasses are increasingly harder to come by. Survival depends on moving to lower elevation lands where food is more plentiful and where their huge heads don't have to plow away so much snow. Some of the gentle giants have made their way west down from Yellowstone's interior, while hundreds more are headed north into the Gardner Basin. Migration itself, just walking the earth, is a heavy chore this time of year. The buffalo's massive bodies must trudge through snow that can come up to their shoulders or even deeper. Winter is a formidable challenge, and many will not survive, though chances of survival increase exponentially when they reach the habitat they seek. But it is not only winter who the buffalo must face. Following the relief of finally making it to lower elevation habitats, the buffalo are then met by a much more dangerous and numerous threat, humans. Along both boundaries, hunters who have only to call a state-run buffalo hunt hotline to find out if the native bovines have left Yellowstone's boundary await their easy prey. Unless the buffalo make the hard choice not to migrate and remain in the park, or unless they can access private lands where hunting is not allowed, they don't stand a chance. Last Wednesday morning in Gardner, Buffalo Field Campaign patrols were monitoring a group of buffalo who had migrated across Yellowstone's north boundary, somehow successfully making it through the infamous choke point of Beatty Gulch, finally resting on the private lands of the Church Universal and Triumphant. During Buffalo Field Campaign's first decade, stepping foot on CUT land was a sure death sentence for wild buffalo. In recent years, and after millions of taxpayer dollars paid to CUT, these lands have become one of the places where buffalo are relatively safe. On this particular morning, however, no place was safe. Hunters with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes entered CUT land and hazed, that is, forcibly removed, a group of 18 buffalo off of those private lands, chasing them onto public land where six were shot and killed. Buffalo Field Campaign is currently in discussions with KSKT game wardens, who are conducting their own investigation to determine if these actions are allowed. Shortly after these buffalo were killed, another seven were also gunned down. This is only the beginning of what is shaping up to be a very deadly winter for our national mammal, the country's last wild migratory buffalo. Very soon, wild buffalo will not be safe even within Yellowstone's boundaries. Yellowstone National Park has stated they may open their Stevens Creek buffalo trap as early as next week, much earlier than in recent years. This trap is a buffalo's worst nightmare. Hunters, of course, would rather be the ones to do the killing, so there is a race against the trap to kill as many buffalo as possible before Yellowstone's capture operations begin. That's pretty much where the conversations about buffalo management, read killing, begin and end. Who will get to kill the most and how? There is no regard for the buffalo's need or what is best for these herds, the landscape, or their wild community members, nor the buffalo's long-term viability. Those who participate in the management of wild buffalo come from a fundamentally human-centric perspective. Yellowstone claims they must slaughter as their hands are tied due to Montana's intolerance. Montana deflects the blame back to Yellowstone. Hunters assert that they should be the ones to kill since buffalo are going to be killed anyway. This lack of accountability, coupled with the lazy acceptance that buffalo are going to be killed anyway, needs to be challenged. The false premises that wild buffalo are overpopulated, that they pose a brucellosis threat to livestock, and the intolerance read prejudice of livestock interests against native wild buffalo are the driving forces, however unjust and untrue, behind the senseless killing. Please consider joining the Buffalo Field Campaign on the front lines, and if you can't make it in person, please support our work so we can remain here. Together we can continue to make a lasting positive difference for wild buffalo. And if you're interested in volunteering, I suggest you go to the webpage www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. Go to their volunteer page and read it carefully. There's a lot of very specific information there. And then do call ahead to let them know that you're coming. Once again, that webpage, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And down in the Antarctic, Sea Shepherd intercepts Japanese whalers in the Australian Whale Sanctuary. In this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society of Australia. Thursday, the 22nd of December, at approximately 6:40 p.m. GMT, Sea Shepherd's patrol vessel, the Ocean Warrior, intercepted one of the harpoon ships of the Japanese whale poaching fleet in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. The crews of the Ocean Warrior and the MV Steve Irwin have been battling through thick fog and ice to protect the whales in the Australian Whale Sanctuary, said Captain Adam Meyerson of the Ocean Warrior. The Ocean Maru was hiding behind an iceberg and came out on a collision course. The harpoon ship was located approximately 165 miles northeast of Australia's Casey Base, well inside the Australian Whale Sanctuary. Sea Shepherd's vessels are now on the hunt for the centerpiece of the illegal Japanese whaling fleet, the floating slaughterhouse known as the Nishin Maru. Finding one of the hunter-killer ships hiding behind an iceberg in thick fog means that the rest of the fleet is nearby, said Meyerson. We all hope to have whaling in the Southern Ocean shut down by Christmas. I'm not sure that happened. In the meantime, foggy weather conditions have made for poor visibility for the whaling fleet, which is a great sign for the whales. While I applaud the work Sea Shepherd is doing in locating the Japanese whaling fleet deep inside the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, it is appalling that they are having to do the Australian government's work for them, said Australian Green Senator Peter Wish Wilson. In a statement reacting to the news, the whales are getting more protection from the weather than from the Australian government. And if you want more information, go to www.seashepherd.org.au. And a pheasant shooting estate has been targeted by the Animal Liberation Front in this story received anonymously by Biteback. ALF targeted a pheasant hunting shooting estate in the beginning of December. 55 feeding stations were destroyed. A pheasant pen with over 200 square meters was completely torn down. Anise seed and feed trails were traced towards the outside of the shooting estate to attract the birds to safety. The cabins were spray-painted to ensure the owners got the message. Reports after the attack confirm that the birds have moved positively outside of the game areas. We know the gamekeepers will really struggle this holiday, knowing that they charge £1,000 per gun per day and there are no birds to shoot. We would like to show our respect to our comrades at Hunt Saboteurs Association, who have seen some horrible killings of foxes lately and have been ignored once again by the authorities. I'll have that story in just a moment for you. We will never give up. We are everywhere. We will not rest until the oppression is lifted, until every animal is free. Animal Liberation front. And the story and more can be found at www.directaction.info. And this story, Ledbury Hunt Stopped from Hunting, by the Bristol Hunt Sabs, as found on the Earth First Newswire. We paid a visit to the Ledbury Hunt today, who met at the Robin Hood Inn in Castlemorton, United Kingdom. Shortly after 12 o'clock, the hunt left the meet with a large number of field and car followers in tow. Sabs announced our arrival by briefly taking the pack from the huntsman, who had put them in a thicket in an attempt to put up a fox. After a quick spin in our vehicles to get ahead of them, we came across them working through a wood, and on our approach, the huntsman took the hounds and shot off. Sabs kept on the hunt and again caught up with the huntsman, Mark Melladay, who had now changed from his red coat into black in an attempt to avoid detection. Sabs stayed close as he encouraged the hounds through thick gorse on Castlemorton Common. A trail through there, really? Before taking off with them at speed as they got on a scent and went to cry. We quickly caught up in our vehicles and followed the huntsman and hounds along the road, no longer in cry. After some doubling back and forth, Sabs located the huntsman off his horse with hounds in a wood. Never a good sign. Sabs went in to investigate, and when the huntsman realized he had company, left the wood with the hounds and headed back to his horse. Upon reaching the edge of the wood, it became clear what was going on, with a number of masked terrier boys hanging around a large badger set where a fox had taken refuge. Being caught up to no good, they immediately tried to get the Sabs away from the area, launching an unprovoked attack on them. Undeterred, Sabs carried on with the huntsman, with others checking back at the set shortly afterwards and finding the terrier boys filling in the holes they had been digging before leaving the area. For the rest of the day, it was cat and mouse with the huntsman and hounds, who was never keen to stick around in any one place for long, with Sabs always on his trail. After a few attempts to lose us, it wasn't long before he was again drawing through the gorse and scrub on the common, using his voice to encourage hounds through and to put a fox up. Sab stuck close by, and after drawing a few blanks, the huntsman gathered the pack in fading light before heading back to box up. All in a good day. If the Ledbury Hunt and their terrier boys think violence will stop us from protecting hunted wildlife, they can think again. We'll be seeing you. Wardens from the Malvern Hills Conservatives, the organization that manages the Malvern Hills and the commons around it, were also in the area today. This appeared to make the hunt less keen to spend time on the common and hills as they did this same time last year, where they hunted fox right up into the hills. Despite being in the area, none of the wardens were present when the dig out of the badger set or the attack on the Sabs took place, nor did they appear to intervene when the huntsman was blatantly drawing scrub on the common to put up a fox. Not being into British hunt sab lingo, I don't understand what that all means, but basically it sounds like the huntsman had a terrible day, the sabs had a great day, and you can find out more about it at www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And the Sea Shepherd and the Mexican Navy have teamed up to catch illegal poachers, and fishermen were arrested in this story from the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Six fishing boats engaged in illegal activities were spotted by Sea Shepherd Conservation Society in Mexico's Sea of Cortez, ending in their arrest by the Mexican Navy. On December 12th, Sea Shepherd's MV Farley Moat located poachers on radar before confirming their identities with binoculars. The six fishing boats were working together using forbidden nets to catch the endangered Totoaba bass inside a marine reserve in Mexico's Gulf of California. The Totoaba is a rare fish native to the Gulf that can measure up to 6 feet in length and weigh as much as 220 pounds. Fishing for Totoaba has been banned by the Mexican government since 1975, but it continues to be hunted by poachers solely for its swim bladder, which is sold on the black market in China for more than $20,000 per kilo. That's about $10,000 per pound. When spotted by the Farley Moat crew, the poachers began retrieving their nets as fast as they could, while others fled the scene immediately. The Farley Moat tracked these boats, even while some of them tried to slow it down by maneuvering around the Sea Shepherd vessel. Throughout the process, the Farley Moat remained steadfast, following the poachers for about an hour until the Navy arrived. The poachers attempted to evade capture, giving up only when the Navy came at them with rifles drawn. No shots were fired, however. Without Sea Shepherd, the poachers would continue to destroy their own environment, said the Farley Moat captain, Sebastian Fow. Farley Mowat and the MV Sam Simon are currently in the Gulf of California as part of Operation Milagro 3 to stop the imminent extinction of the endangered vaquita porpoise. Both ships are protecting the vaquita refuge and patrolling for poachers, among other duties. Known as the world's smallest and rarest marine mammal, the vaquita is facing a real threat of extinction. The most recent statistics show the population has dwindled to an estimated less than 60 individuals. The biggest threat to vaquita survival are the poachers using illegal gill nets to catch the totoaba. Vaquita often become entangled in the nets and are unable to reach the surface of the water to breathe, causing them to drown. The arrested poachers were using shrimp nets, forbidden in the vaquita reserve since 2015, and totoaba nets, which are banned in Mexico. While investigating the nets left by the fleeing fishermen, Farley Mowat found such live animals as sharks, rays, crabs, and other fish trapped in the mesh. All were released. Sea Shepherd's partnership with the Mexican Navy is achieving results, says Sea Shepherd founder and CEO Captain Paul Watson. Every poaching vessel intercepted and arrested is one step closer to preventing the extinction of the totoaba and the vaquita, said Captain Leader and Director of Ship Operations Captain Auna Loyal. Our collaboration with the Mexican authorities in patrolling the area and retrieving nets is highly important to the safety of the vaquita refuge and marine reserve. The more boats Sea Shepherd has in the area, the better we can guard against poaching. The vaquita needs all of our efforts now. And you can find more information at www.seashepherd.org. And hundreds of foxes will be culled in London after Christmas celebrations in this story by Sephora Smith of the Evening Standard, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Hundreds of foxes living in London, England, will be culled in the new year as waste lines the streets of the capital following Christmas celebrations, a pest controller has said. Tom Keithley, 59, who says he has shot and killed thousands of foxes over a career spanning 30 years, revealed demand for his services soars following the festive period. He said excess waste lining London's streets during the holidays leads to a spike in complaints from people wanting to be rid of the animals. He said there will be bin liners overflowing and bursting open with leftovers, which is heaven for foxes. They also prefer feather over fur, so chicken and turkeys go down nicely. Approximately 10,000 foxes live in London, roughly a third of British total urban fox population. Mr. Keithley says they are attracted to the waste from homes and takeaway restaurants. The fox controller charges between £350 and £450 for a culling session, plus £50 to £75 per fox killed. Says customers commonly complain of foxes rummaging through their trash bins, keeping them up at night or destroying their gardens. On average, Mr. Keithley gets two or three calls a week, but in January he expects there to be more. He said his customers come from all walks of life, but he is most often called out in Camden and St. John's Wood. Controlled lethal culling of foxes is legal in England. Mr. Keithley has a rifle license, and he says he informs the police on the day of the cull to avoid any embarrassment or misunderstanding. And the webpage has a picture of him with his rifle pointed out a window. And you can find this and other stories at theearthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And cheetah extinction is getting close, with just 7,100 left in the wild, experts warn. In this story by John von Radowitz of the Mirror, as found on the Earth First Newswire. The cheetah, the world's fastest land animal, is sprinting to extinction, experts have warned. Urgent action is needed to stop the big cat dying out, with scientists estimating just 7,100 remain in the wild. They occupy just 9% of the territory they once lived in. Asiatic populations have been hit the hardest, with fewer than 50 individuals surviving in Iran, according to a new investigation led by the Zoological Society of London and the Wildlife Conservation Society. In Zimbabwe, Africa, cheetah numbers have plummeted by 85% in little more than a decade. The cheetah's dramatic decline has prompted calls for the animal's status to be upgraded from vulnerable to endangered on the International Union of Conservation of Nature Red List of Threatened Species. Dr. Sarah Durant from ZSL and WCS, project leader for the Range-Wide Conservation Program for Cheetah and African Wild Dogs, said This study represents the most comprehensive analysis of cheetah status to date. Given the secretive nature of this elusive cat, it has been difficult to gather hard information on the species, leading to its plight being overlooked. Our findings show that the large space requirements for cheetah, coupled with the complex range of threats facing the species in the wild, means that it is likely to be much more vulnerable to extinction than was previously thought. The cheetah is one of the world's most wide-ranging carnivores and needs a lot of space. Partly because of this, 77% of its remaining habitat falls outside of protected areas, leaving the animal especially vulnerable to human impacts. Even within well-managed parks and reserves, the cats have suffered as a result of humans hunting their prey, habitat loss, illegal trafficking in cheetah parts, and the exotic pet trade, say researchers writing in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. In Zimbabwe, these pressures have seen the cheetah population plunge from 1,200 to a maximum of only 170 animals in 16 years, a decline of 85%. The experts want to see a completely new approach to cheetah conservation, focusing on the landscape that transcends national borders and incorporates coordinated regional strategies. It would involve motivating both governments and local communities to protect the cheetah and promote the sustainable existence of humans and wildlife. Dr. Kim Young Overton from the wildcat conservation organization Panthera said, "We've just hit the reset button on our understanding of how close cheetahs are to extinction. The takeaway from this pinnacle study is that securing protected areas alone is not enough. We must think bigger, conserving across the mosaic of protected and unprotected landscapes that these far-reaching cats inhabit, if we were to avert the otherwise certain loss of the cheetah forever." And again, www.earthfirstjournal.org/newswire. And speaking of jaguars, a new jaguar has been photographed in southern Arizona. Jaguar celebrity El Jefe has company, not exactly next door, but at least on this side of the U.S.-Mexican border. A young male jaguar has been photographed in southern Arizona's Huachuca Mountains near the town of Sierra Vista. The great cat was caught on a Fort Huachuca trail camera, his image posted on Facebook by a Boy Scout troop. "We've been expecting another jaguar to pop up in southern Arizona," said Randy Seraglio, a conservation advocate at the Center for Biological Diversity. "Jaguars belong here, and if we protect the wide open spaces they need, they'll thrive here again. El Jefe has proven that." Jaguars roamed through the southern United States for thousands of years before being wiped out after European settlement. The Center for Biological Diversity has been working for years to protect jaguars across the American Southwest. And a settlement has called for to protect 34,000 acres for a rare salamander. As part of a legal settlement with the Center for Biological Diversity, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has released a final recovery plan for endangered California tiger salamanders living in Santa Barbara County. The plan calls for protecting 34,000 acres of the salamanders' breeding ponds and adjacent uplands. "With the recovery plan, we can fight threats like habitat destruction that have pushed these animals to the brink of extinction," said the center's Jenny Loda. "This plan gives us hope for one of our most imperiled salamanders." And a petition seeks a better plan to save red wolves. As the population of wild red wolves is rapidly declining, with their management still determined by a recovery plan 26 years old, the Center for Biological Diversity and their allies petitioned the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for an updated plan to bring the wolves back from the brink. Since their 1990 recovery plan, red wolves have expanded their range and now face additional threats, which our petition provides strategies to address, including reducing shootings, boosting genetic diversity, and more. "The red wolf can be saved," said the center's Colette Adkins. "A new recovery plan would outline all the steps to ensure that future generations may see this beautiful wolf in the wild again." And in a settlement, risks must be assessed before deep-sea mining. A victory for the ocean depths under a legal settlement secured last week by the Center for Biological Diversity as a result of our 2015 lawsuit. "The Trump administration must conduct in-depth analyses of risks to wildlife and ocean ecosystems before it approves deep-sea mining projects." The deep ocean is believed to contain billions of dollars worth of rare earth metals and minerals, Several countries and corporations are pushing deep-sea mining projects in the South Pacific where marine scientists fear it could devastate deep water ecosystems. I'd hate to see these beautiful underwater worlds torn apart by industrial machinery, said Emily Jeffers of the Center. This agreement will be an important step in protecting sea turtles, whales, and other wildlife threatened by deep-sea mining. And a California court has upheld a ban on state ivory and rhino horn trade. An L.A. Superior Court has upheld California's ban on trade in ivory and rhino horn. Ivory market proponents filed suit challenging the ban earlier this year. So the Center for Biological Diversity and partners intervened. Before the ban, California was the second largest ivory market in the United States. With current poaching levels, elephants could disappear from Africa in 20 years, said Sarah Ulliman, the center's international program director. This decision paves the way for other states to follow California's lead, giving elephants a chance for the future. And attached to this year's annual spending bill, funding agencies like the EPA and the Fish and Wildlife Service, is a disastrous provision which would strip federal protection from wolves in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and Wyoming. Republicans have been trying to sneak this rider through for years, and now caving to the pressure of those anti-wildlife forces, Senator Tammy Baldwin has publicly offered her support. "We can't let it happen. Provisions like this undermine science, democracy, and our environmental laws. And if this one goes through, hunters and industry will declare open season on wolves." And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 9 p.m. You can listen to a rebroadcast on Free Radio tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. That's Friday at 3 p.m. In Massachusetts, tune in to WMNB 107.1 North Adams, Fridays at 5:30 in the morning. KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, at a frequency of 90.3 FM, broadcasts the Earth First Update Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Or in Dade City, Florida, you can listen to WLSL 92.7 Sundays at noon. And you might try going to Grateful Dread Public Radio, gdprnashville.org, Sundays at 2 a.m. And you can also find them on TuneIn and Spotify. Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 FM broadcasts the Earth First Update sometimes, but you can always get it at radioforall.net. That's radio, the number 4all.net, where you can listen online and download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and to air. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update. And Happy New Year.